nervous and have a special lawsuit. Yeah. Extreme case.
Good morning. Good morning, everybody. We have an exciting day planned. I'm just kidding. We do have an exciting day planned. Very, very, very nice little thing which we're in the middle of here. We're in the middle of Perek Tes, the Gvuras Hashem. And in Perek Tes, he's getting down to what has been the goal of the past several prakim, which is to reach an understanding of why the Jewish people went into Golos. If they managed to abdu, why they go into Golos? If you remember last week, he went through a couple of approaches, three approaches which were offered, one by the Ramban, that we were punished for Avraham Avinu going down, leaving Eretz Yisrael and exposing Sarah to risk when there was a famine. He had serious questions on the Ramban. Another approach was that it happened because of the brothers selling Yosef. And he says, well, it seems, first of all, it was decreed way before. And if anything, the brothers selling Yosef was the way that the original decree was fulfilled, rather than being the original cause for the whole thing. So what was the original cause for the whole thing? And the third option was that it wasn't a punishment for anything. It was just some form of Yisurin Shalava, some form of positive challenge that was being given to the Jewish people. And the Maral had a hard time with that because he said that kind of a thing should not happen and kill the person in the process. They should be able to live to enjoy the benefits of what they did, but yet the generations that went down to Mitzrayim and suffered, many of them just died there. And of course we discussed that that's a chiddush to be bothered by that and to object to that, because one would imagine that we're dealing with the corporate entity of the Jewish people, which certainly did survive the Golos, and therefore could have been seen as a Yisurin Shalava, as a necessary process for the Jewish people as a people to go through. However, the Ramban, the Maral went on, Maral again had problems with all of these, and it was his way, and is his way, and he says, so let's go to what Chazal said. Why are we trying to find new reasons? The Gemara asks why the Jewish people went into Golos, and the Gemara gives answers to those things. So let's sit and learn the Gemara. Let's sit and learn the Gemara. And last week he didn't get down yet to the details of what the three pshatim. That's what we're going to be focused on today. Last week he just started with the fact that the Gemara says and assumes that this was a ched in Avraham Avinu, and that's what did it. And he spoke about the idea that because Avraham Avinu is the shoresh, Avraham Avinu is the root of the Jewish people, so therefore their history and is going to be found very significantly within him, something which we found before in his discussion as well of the Bris Bein HaBesarim. And he spoke about the details as to, well, if it's Avram's chet, why doesn't it happen to Avram? Why doesn't Avram experience it? And he explained that not only didn't it happen to Avram, because Avram is the Echad, not only didn't it happen to the Yudbeis, to Yitzchak or to Yaakov, also because of their uniqueness, it didn't even happen to the 12 Shvatim. It only happened once the Jewish people reached 70 souls. Because 70 is already a number which has common occurrence with the nations of the world who are 70, and therefore it's when they're 70 that they become vulnerable. And in fact, I just want to mention that one of our participants in the Shir last week said, that's really cool. Why? Because in fact, it was the instant that they became 70 that they came into Mitzrayim. Because Chazal tell us they were 69 people who left Eretz Yisrael, and Yocheved was born just as they were walking through the walls. It says, Bein HaChaymais, between the walls. What does that mean? Right? If you walk through that doorway, when you're in the doorway, you're between the two walls. Right? So Yocheved was born literally as they were walking in. That's when they became 70, which means that they could only be in Mitzrayim, under Mitzrayim, when they reached this number of 70. I said, wow, that's really cool. And then I noticed that the Maral says exactly the same thing. Mm-hmm. Right? And Maral, in fact, alludes to that, and he says, and he just doesn't speak a Yocheved, so he just, in running, he says, they came to Mitzrayim in the instant that they became 70 souls. Okay, so that's the idea which he says, And he went on and he said, and that's why, as long as, that's why Yaakov Avinu, when he died, left Mitzrayim, because then he wasn't any more part of the 70. The Shvatim eventually would leave Mitzrayim, a step below, and while any of the Shvatim was alive, the Egyptians really couldn't control them, because there was still a sense and a throwback to that uniqueness of the Jewish people that was invulnerable to what Mitzrayim would have otherwise inflicted upon them. That's what we saw last week. So now what we're going to be focusing on today is the specifics of the Gemara. Okay, we know now this idea, Avram Avinu, it was in his actions or inactions that that is the source of the problem or the punishment of the Golos. We've seen that. We understand why it's in Avram. We understand why Avram didn't experience the Golos himself. But now we have to look at the details. Oopsie. Now we have to look at the details of why the. Now we have to look at the details of why they went into Golos. Okay, so this is the middle of Perek Tes of the Gvuras Hashem. We're up to page Nun Hey, and page Nun Hey V'tucha Loimar. And now he's going to get into the details of the three interpretations in the Gemara why the Bnei Yisrael were in Golos. And the Maral is going to have really sort of three iterations, three different ways that he goes through the three reasons given in the Gemara. The three reasons given in the Gemara, let's go over them and get them clear. The first reason which is given in the Gemara is the reason of Rabbi Avohu. Rabbi Avohu said that the reason why they went into Golos was because Avram Avinu drafted the Torah scholars in the Battle of the Five Kings. Right? When he went to battle against the four kings, on the side of the five kings, Asa Angariya B'Talmidei Chachamim. And because of that he was punished and we went to Mitzrayim. That was what Rabbi Avohu said. Shmuel said that the reason why we went into Golos was because he asked Hashem, when Hashem promised Eretz Yisrael to his descendants, he says, how do I know? Bama Eda Ki Irashena. And because of that, he got this. And Rabbi Yochanan said that the reason was because Avram Avinu, when he had all these POWs from the battle, and the King of Sodom said, give me my people back, he gave them back. And that removed from him the option and the possibility of bringing them tachas kanfei Hashchina into the presence of Hashem, into belief of Hashem. So he failed. Hifrish milachnis gerim tachas kanfei Hashchina. Those are the three pshatim which are given in the Gemara. So you know, ein ze oimer eladar sheni. It invites understanding, and that's what the Maral is going to set out to do. So the yisod number one, the principle number one, which moves the Maral. What Maral's going to do is he's going to establish three principles. The first two very clearly, the third a little more difficult. But he's going to establish three principles as to what is the core here of the Golos. And the first principle as to what's the core of the Golos is that Golos was there, Golos and Gula are there for Emuna. They're there for to help belief, build faith and knowledge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if you need a proof of that, all you have to do is look at the verses which describe so many times, which not describe, but explain so many times at the time of Gulas Mitzrayim that Hashem was going to do the Geula in order that people should be aware of Him, that people should know of Hashem. Ilman Teidu, so you should know that there's nobody like me throughout the land. That is the purpose of the actions of Geula. That's what it is. And therefore, if Golos Ugeulas Mitzrayim is an emuna builder, so what would be the basis of the sin that would get us into the problem to begin with? Would be some kind of a weakness, some kind of a failure of emuna. So what's that, and how does that work? So the Ramaral explains as follows, that those are the three stages of the Gemara. The first stage is Asa Angariya B'Talmidei Chachamim. Avram Avinu was headed into the battlefield. And when a person's headed into the battlefield, they could be very scared. They could be very scared. If you have trust in Hashem, you're still going to be, of course, aggressive. You're still going to be careful. But you're not going to go and draw into your hishtadlus, into your efforts, into the battlefield, something that you would imagine Hashem may not want you to draw into the battlefield. To take people who are involved in a different kind of war, so to speak, in Milchamta Shel Torah, they're involved in the war of Torah, what our sages called, in study of Torah, and to pull them out of that in order to fight your battle implies a certain fear that without that you're not going to make it. And that, says the Maral, was a lack of bitachin on the part of Avraham Avinu. Writes the Maral, Ilu lokach haroi lemilchama ein zechet shein semchen al anes. If Avraham Avinu would have just drafted people who are suited to battle, who would be appropriate to include in the battle, there'd be nothing wrong with that. We wouldn't say, oh, Avram, why are you even drafting soldiers? You're scared? Well, Pashut, you don't rely on miracles. Avalokach talmidei chachamim. But he took Torah scholars. Meire shohei yore. That implies, since he's taking people who really don't belong in the battlefield and are doing something so important for the spiritual well-being of the Jewish people, that implies that he was scared. He should have trusted Hashem, and he should not have taken into the battlefield these who do not belong on the battlefield. That's why we went into Golos, and we had the contrast Geula, which would show us about Hashem, to inspire us to trust Hashem. And when we trust Hashem, we still have to make efforts, but we make more legitimate efforts. Right? My Rebbe Zuchayim Levracha, Rabbi Lamri, this was a point which he would make to us all the time, and I'm sure I've shared it with at least some of you before, that the issues of legitimate hishtadlus, of making proper efforts in order to have money, to make money, to keep your money, right, is not just a matter of ethics. It's a matter of faith. It's a matter of faith. If you believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that the Eibishter feared to develop, that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam runs the world, so then you know that you're supposed to make efforts because that's the way Hashem made the world, right? Ein Samchen Al Anes. Hashem doesn't have, under conventional circumstances, man rain down next to our front door. We have to work. We have to do things. But that's what Hashem wants us to do in order that He will provide for us. And if that's the case, then we have to believe that an effort that he wouldn't want us to make isn't going to get us anywhere. Ultimately, isn't going to get us anywhere. Okay, it might make it that if we go and we make a heist, right, and we embezzle $100,000, so we'll have $100,000 more in our bank account, right? But that doesn't mean that we're not going to have a roof leak and a mold problem and, whatever else it is. So easy come, easy go. Hishtadlus, that's illegitimate, doesn't make sense for a person who is a believer. And so when the person cheats on their taxes or tries to swindle a client or whatever else it is, that person isn't just doing something which is unethical, that betrays a lack of faith. Says the Maral over here, he had to make efforts. He was going to battle. But there's efforts which are appropriate and inappropriate. And to take the Talmidei Chachamim from the Beis Medrash was considered to be something that, if you believe that Hashem is the one who's rewarding the Ishtadlus, those wouldn't be the ones that you would be taking out of the taking onto the battlefield.
So did it reflect fear? Did he take them because he just didn't have enough men, it seemed, to go into battle, so he needed to draft additional people, and these were extra people? Was it that kind of natural logistical need that led him to have them fight?
That's what it sounds like. Correct. Yeah.
We read this as there was a lack of tikkun at some level, and that's revealed by this, as opposed to we know that was the avera that
What he's saying is that all of this, all of these faults, are revealing a chisorin in emuna. It's not the avera per se of I did this, I did that. It's because there is a lack of emuna which this action betrays, and therefore they needed the process of golus and geula to solidify, to firm up their emuna. Shmuel disagrees, says the Maral. Yes, there was a lack of emuna in Avram Avinu, but he didn't have emuna that he would survive. He didn't believe that Hashem would save someone like Avram Avinu, who was his beloved, was his chosen one. Of course he would save him. His lack of emuna was on the next level, which was that Hashem promised him Eretz Yisrael. And Eretz Yisrael is a matana. It's a gift. And as we discussed before, when Avraham Avinu asked the question of Amo Eda Ki Roshena, the question may not have even been so much, we discussed before, a lack of faith, but we have to do something to deserve a gift. So when Avraham Avinu is not having an emunah in Hashem, it's not that he thinks that Hashem is going to betray him or Hashem is going to abandon him, but his question is Hashem so committed to him to give him the gifts, whether they deserve it or not? Right? That future promise, everything which is implicit in the gift of Eretz Yisrael, that is a much higher level of emuna, to trust in the relationship with Hashem to that level, to that extent. And that is perhaps what Avraham Avinu doubted. That's perhaps where Avraham Avinu's emuna was not perfect. Would Hashem take care of him to that extent? That was the question which he asked. And Rav Yochanan, Rav Yochanan was of the next pshat. And Rav Yochanan said, no. Avraham Avinu certainly would have trust in Hashem that Hashem would take care of him. And Avraham Avinu would certainly would not let him fall, would not let him die. And Avraham Avinu would also certainly have trust in Hashem that Hashem would, you know, give him the gift which he promised. But what was missing? Shehifrish milahachnis geirim tachas kanfei ashchina, which means his emuna for himself personally was fine, but his emuna in Hashem was sufficient that he was not driven to the extreme to bring others to that emuna. Why was Avraham Avinu not driven and motivated to bring everybody else like this here in this situation, tachas kanfei ashchina? To have an emuna which becomes so passionate that the person is zoriz lahavi briya is tachas kanfei ashchina sheyaminu boy, he's anxious and ready to go and bring others tachas kanfei ashchina, that they should also believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is the higher level of emuna that Avraham Avinu was taken to task here for. The more you believe in something, the more excited you are about something, the more infectious it will be. The more you will have a need to share this belief and an effectiveness in sharing this belief with others. So those are the three levels according to the Maral. This is all something to build emuna. According to Rabbi Avo, Avraham Avinu had apparently even doubts about whether Hashem would help him. According to Rabbi Yechon, he certainly knew Hashem would help him. His doubts were about whether Hashem would necessarily follow through with the gift forever, come what may, merit or no merit. And according to Rav Yochanan, he had confidence in that as well, but he apparently just was not enthusiastic enough in his emunah to share it with others. Now, I want to just here say a little bit of a parenthetical aside. We're here to learn the Maral's Torah on this Gemara. You know, we have other thoughts on this matter, but I just want to share one which I think is very important and necessary. Because when you hear this, when you hear this, you must wonder, was there anyone who was more of an enthusiast about spreading the emuna, the faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, than Avraham Avinu? I mean, this chet is astounding, out of character. Avram Avinu, was the Marbitz of Emuna. He was the one who spread Emuna and Hashem Yisparach. He's the Av HaMoyn Goyim. Right? That was what he did. So what happened? Why on this day did he say, it's okay, I don't need them to be Maminim. I don't need them to believe in Hashem. How could that possibly be? So I want to share with you just an explanation of this which I would offer, and I believe it has a lot of merit. There are two ways that you can bring people tachas kanfei hashchina, so to speak, beneath the wings of the divine presence, to bring them into the fold. There are two ways that a non-Jew can become Jewish. One is gerus, conversion. They come as an individual and they say, we recognize, we believe, we understand, and we want to become part of this covenant that Hashem established with the Jewish people. The other way is avdus, and slavery. A non-Jew who becomes a slave of a Jew, right, if it's a male, he has to have a bris. Whether it's a male or a female, they're supposed to go to the mikveh. They have responsibilities for most mitzvahs as being part of the household of the Jew. And of course, you know, when they would be freed from slavery, then they would become fully Jews. Were these people idealistically motivated? No. The ger was idealistically motivated. To the extent that when we give a convert a hard time, you know, when we want to check, you know, what exactly his motives are, the reason is because we will only take a ger. We only want to take a ger who's truly motivated to come tachas kanfei hashchina with pure motives, not with ulterior motives. That's why we give them a hard time, because if, you know, it's just because of some convenience or interest, if they get a hard time, they'll say, you know, it ain't worth it. But if it's because of conviction, then they stay the course. That's the definition of a ger. An eved, a slave, could have absolutely no inspired motivation whatsoever. His attachment to the Jewish people is created because of economic necessity or something like that. And therefore, right, it's a different story. And in fact, the Gemara says, you know, you sometimes have to be a little bit more careful, because you never know with the Eved whether they have completely disengaged from the other thing. You know, by the Ger, you know, they've dropped it to come here. But by the Eved, it was forced out of their hands. So maybe in the closet, they're still an idol worshiper. So you better be careful with their wine, you know, and so on. The Gemara discusses these things. However, right, they would still be Jewish, but it's a whole different model. The case over here was not Avram Avinu's typical method. Avram Avinu's typical method was to inspire people by belief in Hashem to voluntarily accept Hashem as their God. What was happening here was Avram Avinu had the entire population of the five towns of Sodom, Amorah, etc., as his POWs. They had been taken prisoner in a battle, and Avram Avinu won them back. They were his. So Avram Avinu had two options. Option A was to keep them as his. They would be his kinyanim, he would own them, and as part of the family of Avram, part of the household of Avram, they of course would be compelled to accept Avram's God, to have a bris, the works. It would have had all of those things, eventually to have a bris. At this point they didn't have the mitzvah bris yet. But that's what would have happened. And option B was for Avram Avinu to say, no, I'm going to release them. I'll let them go back. And I'm going to live nearby. And when they travel, I'm going to encounter them. And I'm going to invite them in, and I'm going to inspire them to accept Yiddishkeit. And because Avram Avinu is called, as we say, the Nodiv, Bas Nodiv, Mayofu Pamayech Bana Olim Bas Nodiv, he is the paradigm for the Gerim who are called Nedive Amim. You know what a Nodiv is? A Nodiv, a Nedava is the more we're used to the term. A Nedava is a donation. A Nodiv is a person who volunteers to say. Avram Avinu was inspired. Nothing forced him to serve Hashem. What are you talking about with his upbringing? Nothing forced him to serve Hashem. He came from inspiration. And he's the Av of all those who come inspired. But Avraham Avinu never wanted to force anybody to do anything. That's why Hagar got all kinds of ideas when she had this relationship with Avram. She was supposed to be a surrogate mother. She was supposed to be virtually, it seems like, a nothing, just providing a womb that Sarah didn't have, a capable one, for to give birth to a child for Sarah. But Avraham Avinu didn't deal with people that way. Avraham Avinu wasn't a meshabed. It's a fascinating thing that Eliezer is never referred to as the servant of Avraham Avinu until after the Akedah. At the Akedah, where Avraham Avinu really shows an ability to tie someone down and bind, you know, to create Yira in Yitzchak, so then he starts with Avdus. I mean, we're not going to go on there in that direction too much now. We don't have time, but it's a fascinating thing. But Avraham Avinu didn't want to force it. So it's not that Avraham Avinu suddenly dropped his life's mission of bringing people tachas kanfei Ashchina, but this was a different modality. This was to force them to do it from a framework where they had it under compulsion rather than volunteer. And that was something Avraham Avinu shied away from. But still he's taken to task. Because if having them tachas kanfei Ashchina is so important, just get them there. Just get them there. Just get them there. And by the way, what I think is like most poignant from this is that now you understand in a whole different light, with a whole different depth, Avraham Avinu's prayer for Sodom. Sodom was rotten, was terrible, was corrupt, and Hashem was ready to destroy them. And Avraham Avinu gets up and he davens for them. Right? So normally we say, look at that, Avraham Avinu, you know, he cares about the whole wide world. He doesn't want any part of it destroyed. He says, Hashem, give me a chance, you know, maybe there's some tzaddikim, maybe there's some righteous people. But now you understand, it's incredibly more poignant. Because he had them. He had them in his hand. If they would have remained as the servants of Avram and they wouldn't have been free to their own, they would not be doing what they became ultimately known and condemned for. They may have done it once, but as the household of Avram Avinu, they would have been brought under his control, if not his influence. But Avraham Avinu thought he'd be able to influence them. So he said, I'll let him go back, and I'll influence them. But he couldn't influence them. And because of that, they were on the brink of destruction. So when Avraham Avinu wants to save them, it's not like, oh, you know, I heard there's a problem in Afghanistan. Hashem, please don't destroy Afghanistan. Those poor Afghanis. These are the people that Avraham Avinu, had he made the decision that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted him to make at the time, this would not be an issue. They would be tachas kanfei Ashchina. By crook, right? Not by volunteer, but because of the PLW. But they would have been, and they wouldn't have to be destroyed. And now Avraham Avinu desperately turns to Hashem, and he says, Hashem, help. Isn't that something? That was a whole different story. Huh?
That goes under the assumption that they wouldn't have gone, there wouldn't have been recidivism anyway. I mean, they may have gone back to their bad ways. That shows a lot of power for Avraham. Because, I mean...
Ben, you don't know what a slave is. You never saw one. You're used to your employees, right? Who say they're going out for 15 minutes to pick up a sandwich and come back 45 minutes later. Right? These were slaves. These were prisoners of war who became slaves. Avraham, there's no recidivism in a slave. He's a slave. He's controlled. But he's in the master's house. That's what you understand what I'm saying?
You're saying it's too hard. Like I don't know what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's too hard. Or if they had these bad motives, if they had just darkness in their soul.
Won't be hard. Yeah. The black thing.
That's the lack of a motive. It's too hard.
Yeah, but if they had darkness in their soul to begin with, and they were doing these horrible things, it's like, oh.
Yeah.
Someone who had that potential.
Right.
How can they, just by being forced to do,
correct,
to become Jewish, why would they not go back to their old ways anyway?
They wouldn't have a chance. You see, we can talk about it. But there are two ways that you can deal with evil. One way is to change it, and the other way is to manage it, to control it.
You're not talking the power of Torah here.
Oh, the power of Torah also. The power of Torah. Right? Sometimes it can transform. And sometimes it's dealing with somebody or something that it apparently is not able to transform. You have a teacher, right, who goes into a nice, fine, wonderful, idealistic teacher who's full of good stuff, who wants to go into a classroom and be one of those teachers that they make those tearjerker movies about. You know, who goes into the inner city classroom and suddenly, you know, after 2 weeks, everybody's eating out of their hand. You know, they're just in their spare time, instead of driving a motorcycle, they're reading Shakespeare. You know, it's fantastic, wonderful. Like, that's their
those movies.
What?
I love those movies.
I love them too, right? But you know, that's what the person thinks. And then they go into the classroom, and they realize that you can do some of that, but you can't do all of that. And you also have to be able to show discipline, and you have to be able to manage. Well, first of all, because sometimes people aren't at the stage yet where they're ready to ditch the Harley for the Shakespeare, or because it's somebody who just won't, because not every person is ready or ripe for inspiration. Sometimes you just got to manage them. You know, when people are dealing with issues of any kind, sometimes you're going to go and send them and hope that you'll be able to have them go through some kind of a therapeutic protocol that will cure them, that will change this weakness. And very often you say, we won't be able to change it, but we have to figure out a strategy to be able to manage it. Avraham Avinu was not interested in managing difficult people. He was interested in transforming them into good people.
Actually, that may make sense according to you. Look at history. For the slaves in the United States, as much as they despised their masters, they took their religion.
Mm-hmm.
How is this a Amunah issue?
So, again, the way the Maral says it is that if Avraham Avinu's Amunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu is stronger, is fuller, so then letting it pass up in any which way, to leave them without emunah would be unacceptable.
So there's no issue that he didn't think he could do it. He didn't realize the power of Hashem to have his effect. It was the way he acted.
How driven he would be.
And Tzitz Mitzrayim was a tikkun that afterwards we.
Yes, because Yetzias Mitzrayim brings the publicity of Hashem, the knowledge of Hashem in a more profound way. L'man teidun, they witness the greatness of Hashem. And that was an emunah builder. That was an emunah builder for Avraham Avinu and for the world. And the Maral concludes this section, and he says the following. And he says something important. He says, you might say, but one second, for this little nuance, you have this incredible punishment? He says, well, no, you have to understand it differently. Emunah needs to be built. And an event like Yetzias Mitzrayim is an incredible emunah builder. So therefore, it should happen to build emunah. But the problem is that there are side effects. The Geulas Mitzrayim only can happen with the Golus first. There's some suffering which happens along the way. To justify that suffering, right, there has to be something that he did wrong. But the goal in itself is worthy. And the Maral says that we have a principle that when something is supposed to happen, right, little things, little details won't get in the way. When something isn't supposed to happen, even big details will not get in the way. Right? He brings us the classic example of that, the Gemara in Yuma, which says, Shol ba'achas v'lei osalei v'davar b'shtayim v'osalei. Shol did one sin and wasn't able to get out of it. David did two and he was able to get out of it. Why? Because David was supposed to be the king. So therefore, the hurdles would be more surmountable. Shaul wasn't supposed to be the king. So as soon as something happened which demonstrated him being undeserving, he got off the track and stayed off the track. So Geulas Mitzrayim is a necessary thing. It's a necessary, I mean, come on. We are supposed to recall it every morning and every night. It's a fundamental experience for publicizing and making known Hashem's presence in the world. So of course it has to happen. But what made it that the Jewish people would have to go through the difficulties to make it happen. So for that we find some little gap in Emunah, which isn't necessarily enough to say, oh, this deserves such a tremendous punishment, but it opens the door for this kind of an event which will bring out the greater Emunah. That's phase one of the Maral.
It's fascinating. It sounds almost as if which came first, the cause or the effect. If what came first is the thought of the effect, you know, this is where we're headed, then we're going to have to find a cause somewhere. We'll stick in there, we'll find some, it's not, or something to find that can trigger the effect. But if the cause came first, if this isn't really where we're headed, but there's an event or action or behavior that triggers an effect, well, then the cause came first.
Right.
But if I may, looking back again to the situation of Alan managing the POWs, it sounds as though it may echo a little bit the effect of Adam Rishon, I mean, if there is any of that. Adam Rishon passed up the opportunity to do that which Kaifar, who commanded him to do, for a more difficult process, so to speak, of internalizing sin and then trying to serve a Kaifar who do that. Is there any parallel with that here? Avram, of course, this wasn't a commandment per se, but it seems as though Avram Avinu was passing up the more easier opportunity of managing these individuals through Avdus for the more complete, more difficult attempt
of inspiring
and influencing them.
I see the parallel which you're drawing. I don't have any sources to add to that, but I see the parallel which you're drawing. It's an interesting parallel. Okay. Yeah.
In the shot that shouldn't have drafted the first scholar.
Yeah.
Does that fit with the shot that it was really Eliezer?
Whether it's Eliezer as one or whether it's Chanichov literally.
Still a first.
Yeah.
Because he was an Eben, it seems to overlap a little bit. Since Eliezer was an Eben.
What does it call him in the pasuk, by the way?
At that point, or
never calls him an Eved. Calls him Chanichov. A student. It's all, I'm telling you, Eliezer had never called the servant of Avram, despite the fact that he appears sometimes by name and sometimes not by name. He is never called an Eved until Parshas Chayesar. Right, when Hashem, when Avram Avinu says, Ben Meshek Beisi Yudha Mesek Eliezer, Ben Beisi Erish, I see, he calls Eliezer a member of my household. He doesn't call him as Eved. Avram Avinu, excuse me, is where Avram Lincoln got it from. Right? Avram Avinu was, by nature, opposed to slavery. This would be a whole shiur, or maybe multiple shiurim, in order to be able to show the many aspects of this, but it's just here is a little window into it, okay? Which you understand then. Again, excuse me, I'm not. This is not the Maral. You understand then that would be a reason why Kal Yisrael will end up being enslaved in Mitzrayim. They come to Mitzrayim, which is a country where they have no relationship ever of one understanding and appreciating the other. It's only one, so to speak, being forced to deal with the other. The relationship with the Jewish people in Mitzrayim is always where somebody is on top and somebody's on the bottom. They're never together. They can't eat together. Right? Yosef comes to Mitzrayim and, right, they say, oh my gosh, Paro had this dream, Mitzrayim's up the creek, Yosef has the dried out creek, right, and Yosef has the solution to be able to save them. So they all are stuck in deference to Yosef. There's not, oh wow, Yosef, he's so inspiring, as if you're going to find somebody that the spirit of Hashem is within him. The last time somebody came through with the spirit of Hashem within them was Avram Avinu, and they said, bye, get out of here. But Yosef, they couldn't say bye, get out of here, because they knew that that Mitzrayim as it was headed down the tubes, and Yosef had a solution. There was never a relationship of the kind that Avram Avinu wanted to cultivate, which was, I teach you, I inspire you, and now we believe in the same things. It was forced. That's why, the way, you know, the Maral says, Rashi says that he brings what Chazal say, that when Mitzrayim, when the famine set in, they went to Paray, and Paray said, do whatever Yosef tells you. Go to Yosef, whatever he tells you, do. Says Rashi, what's going on over here? Of course go to Yosef. I mean, they've been spending the past 7 years setting up so that Yosef would have it, and go to Yosef. They went to Yosef, says Rashi. But Yosef said, sure, I'll give you food. Just one thing. Have a bris milah, and then call me. So they went to Paro. They said, what on earth are we supposed to do over here? He said, whatever Yosef says, do. Says the Maral, why did Yosef want him to have a bris? It's a sight. Okay? So I don't know what the Maral means. But I'll tell you Pashup Shat, what it could mean. When you have an Eved, when a Jew has a slave, that slave has to have a bris. Yosef was now the forced, acknowledged head of Mitzrayim. They were under his hand. They were dependent on him completely, economically, for their sustenance. Yosef didn't want this just to be, okay, well, I'm there, I'm powerful, I support Mitzrayim. Yosef viewed this as his opportunity to bring them tachas kanfei Hashchina, to force them tachas kanfei Hashchina. And it worked. Until the economics changed. And then the shoe went on to the other foot. And then the Jewish people were enslaved beneath the Egyptians. Until Moshe Rabbeinu came along. And then what do we have? We have the Egyptians inspired to believe Moshe Rabbeinu? No, the other way around. Now it flips back again. The Mitzrim never get it. They never get it. Now, that may be the experience for the Jewish people, to, so to speak, adjust from the idealism of, I'm going to inspire the people of Sodom, right, who, by the way, are compared and related to the Egyptians. Kigan Hashem Keres Mitzrayim. Right? Inspiration has its limits. And again, if you doubt it, become a high school teacher. Right? Sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't work. You could also become a congregational rabbi. Right? But but inspiration has its limits.
Is it that Mila Eliezer, that he saw himself as an Eved even though Abraham didn't choose that way, or at least Abraham changed?
I can't answer the question. I can't answer the question.
And Hagar, never,
too,
Hagar never saw herself. That was the whole problem, right? She didn't.
Again, we could explore and discuss it. It's not simple. Hagar goes through phases. Eliezer goes through phases, I think.
And so was the experience of Klal Yisrael as a burning in Mitzrayim necessary in part to instill the fulfillment of this experience so that we could have that relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, since in fact the type of egalitarian, obviously, Abraham, the idealistic, obviously, Abraham started us with is not a paradigm for...
Again, very good, excellent. So that becomes a big part of what we take out of Mitzrayim, which is, I am Hashem, your Lord, who took you out of Egypt from the house of slaves, says Rashi. I took you out of Mitzrayim. You owe me. But you've got to listen to my mitzvahs because you were slaves there, and I freed you from there. So what does that mean? That means you're slaves to me. Right? Yira. And that's one aspect of what we take out of Yitzias Mitzrayim. Right? At another time, we once maybe have learned together that may be the argument between Rav and Shmuel as to what you focused on in the Haggadah. But that's part of it, for sure. is that from Yetzias Mitzrayim, we realize that we are forced, so to speak. We have to defer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I'll say, you know, you could have the marketing companies competing for the Eitz Chaim Kiruv contract. Right? They're going to put a billboard on Old Court and Reisterstown Road. Right? So, what's the conventional marketing company going to come up with? Turn Friday night into Shabbos. You know, enjoy the beautiful experience of ... of whatever this thing is of mitzvahs. Right? What's that? That's trying to inspire people. And then you're going to have the other marketing company. They're going to say, put up the following billboard on the corner of Reisterstown Road. God created you. And if that isn't enough, you were slaves and he freed you from slavery. You owe him big time. Come to Eitz Chaim and find out what he wants you to do. Right? Now, which one is in a certain sense more accurate? In a certain sense, the second one is much more accurate than the first one. The first one's all true, of course. But what are you doing trying to attract people to something that they have an absolute obligation to do? Well, number one, we're not idiots, and we know that the people who are driving by won't believe it's their obligation. They ain't going to show up. But as nice Americans, even by nature, we're much more inclined to the first one than to the second one. Because the way we see our relation to Hashem, we also like to see it more in terms of, you know, Torah is rich, Torah is wonderful, and that's why we do it. When a piece of it is, Torah is what you have to do. And we all know that if we didn't feel that way, in a certain sense, we'd be finished. If you came to davening every time that you were inspired to come to davening, you wouldn't come to davening much. So you know that you're obliged to come to davening, and sometimes you get inspired by it, but you know that if you didn't come all the time, you wouldn't come, and you'd never get inspired by it. So we have to put together both. Okay. Let's try to... We're not going to finish the parak, evidently, but let's try at least to get to the second phase of the Maral, as he goes through his second iteration of Rabbi Avo, Rav, or Shmuel, and Rabbi Yochanan. The three pshatim. The second iteration focuses less on the matter of the emunah and focuses more on the shibud itself. Shibud is that the Jewish people should become enslaved in Mitzrayim. Something they must have done, that midah keneged midah, that measure for measure, they deserve to be slaved. What is that something that they would have done? So Rabbi Avo says, they made angaria b'talmidei chachamim. They drafted talmidei chachamim. Now the truth is, angaria of talmidei chachamim is not just drafting them into the battlefield. The same term of angaria is used, for example, for them to pay certain taxes. Also, angaria is to be subordinate to the king. Says the Maharal.
To
the king. In other words, the governmental responsibilities. To have to give to society that way. The Maral says as follows. Talmud Chacham is Sechel. Talmud Chacham is Das, is wisdom, is knowledge, is understanding. In the world, we have a classic division that we've discussed many times in our learning of the Maral. It's terms which were used by the philosophers as well. They are the terms Chomer and Surah. Matter and form. Matter is just plain raw material. Form is something which is created by a plan, by a thought, by a direction. A ball of clay is matter. You shape it into a cup that's done with intelligence, it's done with plan, it's done with purpose. Tzura is seichel. And chomer is geshem. Tzura is intelligence, thought, direction, and Chaimer is just raw physical materialism. In that framework, Talmud Chacham is classic Tzura. And the greatest way the world is supposed to be set up is that Tzura is sholeit over Chomer, that form rules over matter. Right? Isn't that the way it's supposed to be? But it's not always that way, because sometimes matter rules over form. In other words, that the intelligence, the seichel, isn't strong enough, and just the raw matter overcomes it, right? When we speak about the struggle of a person sometimes, I mean, we say it sometimes for magic tricks, but it's also a struggle every time you drive past Dunkin' Donuts, which is mind over matter. That's tzura over chaimer. That's the struggle. Can't you make mind triumph over matter? The Talmud Chacham is not supposed to be meshubba to anything, because the Talmud Chacham is providing the wisdom, the understanding, the direction. The Talmud Chacham is Tzuras Ha'olam. And Yisrael, the Jewish people likewise, are supposed to be Tzuras Ha'olam. We learned about that in the Netzach Yisrael. We learned about that, these concepts in the Netzach and the Tiferes extensively. That's the role of Yisrael. And therefore Yisrael is not supposed to be Meshubat under anybody else. But if Avraham Avinu goes and he takes the Talmud Chachamim and he drafts them and he subordinates them to a cause, so then he invites as well the subordination of the Jewish people beneath the Mitzrim. That is phase one. Phase two is Shmuel. Shmuel says, no, that's not why we went into Golis. The reason why we were Meshubin in Golis is because Avraham Avinu said, Bamo Eida Ki Roshena. How do I know? Says the Maral, a Mamin is not Meshubin. We learned about this back in Perek Zayin, if you may recall. Maral spoke about Emuna as being strength. Emuna by nature is something which is strong. A Meshubat, one who is enslaved, is weak, is vulnerable. We've discussed at different times, even just a little bit more. If you trust in Hashem, then you realize that your entire fate is in the hands of Hashem. It's only when your trust in Hashem is weaker that you start worrying and indeed start to be affected by the control and the efforts and the direction of others. Klal Yisrael, by nature, if as maminim, should have been completely in the hands of Hashem, and therefore we should never have been Avdei Paro, enslaved by Paro. But because Avraham Avinu showed some weakness in that emunah, in that trust in Hashem, therefore it became possible for us to be subject to others, to Mitzrayim, to be vulnerable, to be weak, instead of being Ne'mon, faithful, strong. Ne'mon doesn't just mean faithful in the sense of religiously faithful. It means faithful means unshakable, unbreakable, invulnerable. When Klal Yisrael showed a weakness in their emunah, they invited a vulnerability to Mitzrayim. That's what Shmuel said. And Rabbi Yochanan said, "Shehifris milahachnes gerim tachas kanfei hashchina." You know why the Jewish people became meshubad? Because they didn't conquer the world. Because when they had people, they didn't try, they didn't overcome them when they had a chance. They just let them be. And he says, what does the Pasuk say in Chumash? When Klal Yisrael goes into Eretz Yisrael, he says, Klal Yisrael, you've got to completely get rid of the inhabitants of the land. Which means, you know what the options were. There was an option that they would convert. There was an option that they would have to be driven out. There was an option that they'd have to be killed. But they couldn't be there. Because the Pasuk says, if you leave them around, they will be l'sikim b'einechem l'tznidim b'tzidechem. Right? I think I'm quoting correctly. They will be a thorn in your side. They will cause you problems. You can't leave them there as is. And what did Avraham Avinu do? Avraham Avinu left. He left them. He didn't turn them around. So Avraham Avinu did not try to create this world of everybody on the side of the Jews. For whatever reason that lapsed. We know Avraham Avinu usually did, but again, we go back to our discussion before. But by leaving them, he left something that would be a thorn in their side. And that's why the Jewish people ended up being Meshubat. So this is the Maral's second iteration. Again, whereas the first one was, there's an issue of Emunah. Golus and Gula are there to create Emunah. And therefore, let's find some weakness in Avraham Avinu's Emunah. Maybe it's Emunah because in his Ishtadlus, he was desperate, he thought he wouldn't survive. Or in his Ishtadlus, or he didn't trust that Hashem was going to take care of him so completely, or he didn't have such a strong enough emunah to want to completely make sure everybody, by hook or by crook, had emunah. But in the end, they went through Golos Mitzrayim, which would strengthen and be the bedrock of emunah for the Jewish people forever. That was phase one of the morale. Phase two of the morale is, let's look at it as a shibud, as the Jewish people being stuck to be subordinated to others. And there are three theories why that happens. The first theory why that happens is because they themselves allowed that which should be on top of the pile, the Talmud Chacham, to become subordinated into the work of others. So therefore the Jewish people also, who should be on top of the pile, become subordinated to Mitzrayim. The second is that they, had they had complete trust in Hashem, then a person who has complete trust in Hashem is so strong they're never vulnerable to anybody. They have trust in Hashem, then they don't believe that anybody else can affect them. But because Avraham Avinu showed this weakness in Emunah, b'moed akirashena, so therefore he displayed vulnerability and he invited, therefore, opposition. And the third approach, the reason why they had to deal with other nations, was because they left other nations to be. When Avraham Avinu had a chance to turn things around, when he had a nation in his clutches, and he could have made them a part of the Jewish team, he let them go. So that came back to haunt him. Well, not with the Sodomites particularly, but just by this thing of leaving other nations to be, is not anticipating how they can be an obstacle to the Jewish people fulfilling their purpose if you don't address them. And there was quite an experience that the Jewish people had of Golos Mitzrayim, of experiencing just that type of an obstacle. So that's the Maral's second iteration. Mir Hashem, next time we'll try and look at his third approach to these three opinions of the Gemara.
It's like a hystava, you have to deal with it.
That's correct. You have to deal with it as a, otherwise it will come back.